Thank you, Mr. Pavlik, and good afternoon to you all. Also bring you greetings from another sister congregation now. Today was the first day for the Myerses to be with Cincinnati, Dayton, and Indianapolis, and for the Hensons in Akron, Canton, and Columbus, Cambridge, which meets in Newark, and it was our first day to be with the Youngstown congregation this morning as their new pastor. So we were very warmly welcomed. In fact, the flowers you see down here in front came from them this morning to bring across. So we did appreciate that. They were very gracious and welcomed us warmly. So that was very much appreciated. We know everybody there. It's just a matter of reminding ourselves of which names to connect with which faces in a couple of instances, and reminder of connections and times of meeting together for holy days, and sometimes the combined services we've had in the past with blessing of children service and so on, where we've had services with three, four, five churches meeting together in the Akron area, which is really the purpose for the cards. We just wanted to acknowledge those times together where Cleveland was hosted by Akron, along with Youngstown, Meadville, you know, some from various visiting congregations. Akron, when Canton was a separate church, would come up as well. So we just wanted to acknowledge that 25 years of service from the Myerses in the Akron area, and we thought it'd be nice to have us jot some notes down, so please feel free to write messages until there's no space left on the card. And the same the other way, to welcome the Hensons. Yeah, I guess we could say welcome them back. They lived in Canton from 1991 to 1996, so they were there initially in those early years of the 90s, and so in a way they're returning to a general area. They finally did find a home. They purchased a house. They had the longest look of all of the transfers, but they found a home in Uniontown, Ohio, which ironically is actually the same town where the Kylos lived years ago before they moved out to Sacramento, and it's like 5 minutes from where my wife grew up. She knows the area very well. In fact, I think they had a Uniontown phone exchange back at that time, and they had a Mogador postal address, and she went to a Suffield County school. So they were kind of in the middle of the crossroads back at that time. Crossroads of America or something like that. I don't know. I think she's indicating they were confused and didn't know where they belonged at the time. I don't know. But, so it's all very familiar to her, the general area. So appreciate if you take some moments to sign those cards. You should recognize which one is that says thanks for the memories and the other one says let's start making memories. I'll let you figure out which is which. I'm sure you'll be able to do that without any trouble whatsoever. Well, I have a question to ask you today. I think you'll see that at some points it does dovetail with the first message with a sermonette from Mr. Patchinger today. What do dominoes, fires, and trials have in common? I'm getting a whole bunch of blank looks. That's to make sure you're paying attention. It has nothing to do with the sermon. No, it does. It has everything to do with the message. If you watched In Accord the last 2 weeks and applied it to church congregations in this area, you might be able to connect the dots and come up with a possible connection. On this week's In Accord, Mr. Franks gave some updates on general church news, including the progress of our church youth camps this summer to date. He mentioned the 4 preteen camps that have been completed. And then we had kind of a different wrinkle this year, as far as I know, from past experience. There's another one that was just this past weekend, a shortened version that was Friday, come in Friday, leave Sunday. And it was sort of a preteen camp, but it was also a family camp in Minnesota. It's kind of a new wrinkle, something different for us. The youngsters came in about noon on Friday and had half a day of activities. Then families could arrive late in the afternoon or early evening Friday and rent cabins on the property and stay over for the Sabbath and Sabbath activities, and there were activities on Sunday, and then everybody left on Sunday evening. So that was kind of a different wrinkle, Camp Lebanon in Minnesota. Mr. Corey Erickson looking after that one. But he talked about the summer camps. His main focus in the rest of the program was on the retirement of Mr. Lyle Welty from the full-time pastoral ministry, and a name that needs no introduction or remembrance here for certain. that comes after 53 years of continuous service to God's people, with his very capable and able wife Margie standing right beside him all those years. And again, all of you know him and them extremely well. It hardly needs any further additions to that. I was very pleased to see the extreme honor that was given to them and accorded to them in that program, and I thought it was entirely appropriate. But if you mull it over, that's kind of where the dominoes come in, because it started with them. The Welties have served all those years continuously, and they have earned a well-deserved rest in that sense from the full-time rigors of the pastoral ministry after 53 years. He is in his mid-70s. She's not very far behind. And it's time to be able to spend more time with family, grandchildren, travel, whatever they enjoy, would like to do. He will continue to serve on the ministerial board of directors. I'm not personally clear whether he continues to serve on the ministerial services team or whether that will also be a change to be announced at some point. We've had a couple of changes fairly recently. Mr. Mike Hanisco is on that team now fairly recently, as is Mr. Gary Black. So sometimes the retirement does change that lineup as well. So we'll see how that goes looking forward. But that's where the dominoes began. Mr. Welty was pastoring three churches, Cincinnati, Dayton, Indianapolis, and Columbus, Cambridge, which meets in Newark. And that's where the final Sabbath was, the retirement in Newark, Ohio, with the Horchacks and the Franks there, as you saw in Accord. But in replacing him, the desire was to be able to bring together a couple of circuits to where those congregations would not be in a spot where they only saw their pastor once every 3 weeks, which is what it's been for 10.5 years. And so the Myerses moved to the other side of Cincinnati completely, the northwest side instead of the southeast side, so that they would be within reach of Indianapolis for a morning service there most weeks and afternoon in Cincinnati, Dayton. They've had some interesting challenges right away because the Indianapolis congregation was certainly amenable to the idea of shifting their time. They appreciated the idea of being able to see their pastor every week. And then they found out that the hall they were meeting in couldn't make the time available for a morning rental instead of the afternoon, which they had been doing. And a few weeks before that, just a month or two before the Welties stepped down, they've been meeting in a church of a Protestant denomination in the Cincinnati area for some years, and no one ever questioned our being there until they had a pastoral transfer and a new pastor came in and said, "Can I see your fundamentals of belief statement, please?" So they said, "Well, last pastor checked it, over here it is," and he informed them that because we do not believe in the Trinity, they would not be able to rent to us anymore. So that's an interesting way to start your basic transfer, moving into a new area, and both halls go kaplooey, you know, right on schedule. So I'm not sure what they've done. I don't think everybody's meeting at the Myers' new home. I don't think it's in any condition yet for receiving that many guests. I'm sure they're still unpacking a multitude of boxes. Since they had actually sold their home in Akron some time ago, they'd been living with their daughter. They had enough room in their place, so Mrs. Myers texted my wife Thursday, and she said, "I went grocery shopping for the first time in 2 months. It was wonderful." So things do change. But those are the dominoes. So that was one set of dominoes that clunked that way. But then the other way, Mr. Henson came over to take Akron-Canton, but not Youngstown. So guess where the domino fell that direction? It clunked over this way a little bit. And this morning, the elder from Youngstown, Mr. Kuntz, Dennis Kuntz, he and his wife Beth were there for the service. I gave the sermon. He made the announcements, and then we walked out to the parking lot together because he was leaving for Meadville and we were leaving for Cleveland for the rest of the day. So it's taking a little bit of juggling of things, but we're making it work. That's the dominoes. Mr. Zach Smith, of course, is well known to everybody here too. They've moved in to replace the Hensons in Pittsburgh Wheeling, with the Waddles taking their place in Houston South. Dominoes have now stopped falling. If you watched last week's edition of the weekly video update, Mr. Kylo took the message and he focused primarily on the new booklet coming out soon, The World to Come, what it will be like. But before he showed the graphic design of the cover of the new booklet and later interviewed Eric Jones, the primary author, just from Akron next to us, he gave some news updates, and that's pretty common for this weekly video update on church news. He gave some general updates about media, his area of responsibility. Actually, Mr. Franks did that last night too, talking about those that access the website and download our booklets. And as he pointed out, the three most commonly downloaded booklets have been accessed by over 100,000 people, only 10% of which are church members. So that's interesting. But Mr. Kyler reminded us of the needs of the brethren around the world, and he talked about a thank you letter from Tarun Ghosh, our congregational leader in Kolkata or Calcutta, India. It's sometimes called either one. And as you might recall, Mr. Ghosh lost his wife Seema to COVID recently. She had pre-existing health conditions, had had a stroke some time back, and died from COVID-19. But he sent a letter of thanks from himself and their daughter Priscilla for the brethren's outpouring of prayers and condolences and messages and support, because we are a family around the world. Another area Mr. Kylo talked about last week was the danger of wildfires building in the southwestern United States. He told us that it's not just the year 2021, as you might recall. In fact, he said, the statistics show us that for the last 20 years, we have had a pattern of extreme dryness. He pointed out that the governor of Utah issued a request for a weekend of prayer to ask God's intervention, because 90% of the state was in extreme dryness, extreme drought conditions. There's talk of water rationing. The governor of Utah asked people to stop taking long showers, fix their leaky faucets, and think of other things to do with their lawn rather than continually watering them. Mr. Kylo pointed out that as of the date of his recording, late June, he said, we haven't even reached the hottest and driest time of the year yet. So where does it go from here? And of course, that's the fires part of the dominoes, fires, and trials. But what else should all this bring to mind? Where does that trials part come in? Well, maybe you're ahead of me. That's what I want to talk about today. And while we're at it, I'd like to make a few observations and maybe some comparisons, and accompanied by lessons we can learn. The dominoes I've explained, beginning with Mr. Welty's retirement. We have another one coming up. Mr. Bill Johns will be retiring, his wife Cheryl, later this summer as well, after just about equally as long a period of service, including 5 years in South Africa. The Johns will be stepping down full time. His replacement is already there, has been training, and has been his associate pastor for a number of years, Blaney Sproul, who was an elder and serving the church in that area for a number of years close to Camp Heritage. They live about 15 minutes from Camp Heritage, and we know them well, and those who have attended there certainly remember their smiling faces many, many times. He will assume the pastorship of those churches, as he's been working full-time for some months now. I hope that we can appreciate the necessity for those changes. I know my wife and I enjoyed meeting the Youngstown Brethren in a different role this morning. We also enjoyed the fact that it was 158 miles round trip and not 272. That was a little different than usual. We'll see how that all plays out going forward, because there aren't any easy answers to sort some of those things out. Mr. Horchak, in my estimation, has done a brilliant job of working with new pastors in training, all of whom have come through the focused mentoring program, which is on the cover of the just-released July-August issue of One Accord. You can see it online. Should be arriving in your mailboxes soon. Those new pastors have been sorely needed and much appreciated. Some of them, like Mr. Sproul, have worked long years at other careers. He and I are actually within a month of being the same age, so I'm not sure how long he intends to continue, but it is appreciated, however much it is. Changes are not simple. I talked about that with Youngstown people this morning. I said, you know, you've exchanged one pastor with a strange sense of humor for another one. And they did the same thing you just did. So it is not always easy to sort those things out. At times like this, brethren, we need to give some thought to some basics of our calling, I think. Like trials, because that's where the third part comes in. Challenges. Sometimes they're like the fiery variety that Mr. Kylo was talking about, the wildfires in Southern California and the Southwest in general. Sometimes when you see some of those videos of those fires, it's just appalling. It's just appalling. And other times, it's not so much a fire as it is a domino. Clunk, clunk, clunk. How do we handle challenges? How do we handle changes? How do we handle trials? I think you know from several years back, my wife and I have had some experience of those fiery trials from one of our visits to visit my stepsister and stepmom in Southern California about 3.5 years ago, actually. And we were awakened one night in the middle of the week by voices in the main area of the house, the living room. It was 4:30 in the morning. We're wondering, what in the world's going on? Well, it turns out there were about 12 to 15 people in there who had been ordered to evacuate their homes just miles, a few miles from where my sister and stepmom live. Those fires have two main causes, and I think there are some analogies for us to think about and learn from. We learned a lot that visit because we could smell the smoke almost the whole time. We could see the ash coming in through and into. We had a bedroom that then had an attached bathroom, full bath, and that one exited out to the laundry area, out basically on the patio overlooking the pool, Southern California living. We'd get up in the morning and there would be little bits of and flakes of ash in the bathroom on the floor, drifted in, and we could smell it the whole time. The wildfires there have two main causes, and I think you're going to find that there's an analogy for us. They're wind and dry conditions. They can lead with just the smallest spark to a terrible conflagration of fire. One of the members in Youngstown this morning was telling us after the same sermon there, that they had heard of a case out west where some of their relatives had lived where it was started by a farmer with just a little bit of an engine spark, a backfire, just the tiniest little spark in the hay or on the dry fields. And he was trying to beat it out and trying to smother it and finally had to run for his life because there was nothing he could do. The Santa Ana winds are a known phenomenon of the area. They form out over the desert east of Los Angeles, and when conditions are right, they blow strongly from northeast to southwest right into the L.A. Basin. They're not sustained winds like a hurricane, but they can occasionally gust to hurricane strength. That's 74 miles an hour minimum. That's hurricane level one hurricane. They typically die down within 48 hours or so, but sometimes they can last quite a bit longer. And that trip out there, they were blowing off and on while we were there. In order to deal with the danger posed by Santa Ana winds, which can be hot or cold, doesn't matter what the season is, they're just dry. The main factor is wind speed and extremely low humidity. Those are the two quality characteristics that cause. People are urged to be prepared to flee or evacuate if that's the only way to avoid personal disaster. And as you can expect, human nature being what it is, there are always a few who refuse. Sometimes with fatal consequences. Houses can be rebuilt, and possessions, even though maybe dear, are after all only physical things. People can't be brought back to life. Not except by a miracle from God, which his whole plan entails. The Los Angeles Fire Department, some years ago, developed a public service ad campaign to help people prepare for times like this. They called it Ready, Set, Go. I thought it was interesting that Mr. Patchinger ended his sermonette with asking the question, are you ready? He didn't look at my notes. He didn't cheat. He didn't, start and give my first of the 3 points for me, but I'll pick up where he left off. Residents were told in this ad campaign when danger threatened that they needed to have their cars packed ahead of time with the basics that they would need if they had to flee quickly. Or in also including things they absolutely had to protect. That was the ready phase. Be ready. Then they were told to be of the mindset that was watchful and able to move almost immediately if the need arose. That was the set phase. And finally, they were told that when their areas were under mandatory evacuation orders, they should not stay behind thinking they could somehow fight the fire and win. They were told, just go. all of which sounds remarkably familiar to the instructions Moses gave the Israelites in ancient Egypt, doesn't it? To be packed and ready, your sandals on your feet, your staff in your hand, and be ready to move. Sounds like it could connect to our lives in the calling God's given us, because we make all kinds of analogies with the experience of the ancient Israelites in Egypt. Christ's instruction in the Olivet Prophecy, I think, illustrates it all very well. Just past that, in Olivet Prophecy, Matthew 24, and in a way it continues into chapter 25. Mr. Patchinger mentioned this in his sermonette too. Matthew 25 and verse 1. Then the kingdom of heaven, a parable begins, shall be likened to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were wise and 5 were foolish. Those who were foolish took their lamps and took no oil with them, but the wise took oil in their vessels with their lamps. But while the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. And at midnight a cry was heard, "Behold, the bridegroom is coming. Go out to meet him." Then all those virgins arose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise answered, saying, "No, lest there should not be enough for us and you, but go rather to those who sell and buy for yourselves." There will always be people who are not ready for the trials and the challenges of life. But while they went to buy, because if this is an analogy of godly character, you can't have somebody else give you some. That has to come from your relationship with God, which also was a message of the sermonette. When they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready, there's that word again, went in with him to the wedding, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he answered and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, I do not know you." That's a scary thing to hear. "Watch, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming." This is the ready phase. Are we ready for the challenges in our lives, whether fires or dominoes, whichever kind they are? Then there's the next step, which actually we can connect from this verse 13 back up to chapter 24, and verse 36 says almost exactly the same thing. Matthew 24, 36. "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood they were eating and drinking, marrying, giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two men will be in the field, one taken, the other left. Two women grinding at the mill, one taken, the other left. Watch, therefore, you don't know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, learn the lesson. You also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household to give him food in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing." This ought to be etched pretty deeply into our minds, shouldn't it? Verse 46 says it all, doesn't it? In effect, it says, are you ready and are you set? Are you just awaiting the word? I suppose you could say the last step is alluded to in verses 12 and 13 of Matthew 24, when it describes a world that would come before Jesus Christ's return, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. Mull this over and hold your place here for a minute. We will come back. I forgot to tell them that this morning in Youngstown. 1 John chapter 2. I think they forgave me this once, but I'm on shaky ground already. No, I don't think so. First John 2, verse 15, the system around us. Do not love the world or the things in the world. There are certainly lessons we can learn. My wife and I have actually witnessed that changing with the guard ceremony at the Tomb of the Unknowns in Washington. And it is quite moving. And it's incredible when you look at the physique of those fellows. Because I think there are weight requirements too, but certainly the 30-inch waist. I'm not sure when the last time I had a 30-inch waist was. It might have been the eighth grade. I'm not sure. But that's part of the world system. And there could be such incredible dedication to that. What is it Paul said? They do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we an imperishable. Do we have that concept in our minds of what it is God asks of us? Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, this system, if we think this system can be some part of it refurbished, we are deluding ourselves. God will start all over, and we want to be part of that team. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. All that is in the world, and here are at least three categories, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, is not of the Father, it's of the world. The world is passing away. This system will not last, and the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. There's the contrast for us spiritually. We cannot be so glued to the things of this world that we would attempt to stay when the order comes to go. Because then we'd be in bad shape. One of the shows my wife and I have sort of found interesting recently on PBS is the show that examines genealogy, family history and genealogy, Finding Your Roots. Henry Louis Gates Jr. Hosts it. And it's usually celebrities where they do some amazing amount of research. In one case, they went back something like 14 generations. Someone who had come from China and were able to trace it back once they got into the recorded lines. 14 generations. It was astonishing. But one of the things that comes out over and over and over again is that choices that are made that seem, well, relatively insignificant at the time can have massive consequences. There was one individual, they were tracing his roots, and they were Jewish. The family was Jewish from Austria. And one line of the family immigrated to this country, the United States, in the 20s and early 30s. But part of the same family, one set of siblings, went back to Austria in the 1930s. And this person, I won't reveal who it was, this person actually began to cry. It was just so moving. He said, I never knew that my parents never told me. I never knew about this. That would have been an uncle of this individual who went back, and then a cousin of his that was destroyed with his young wife and child in the Holocaust. And he never knew. A seemingly insignificant choice. Doesn't seem so comfortable over here. I just can't quite get into the flow of what it's like in the United States. I think we'll go back. And it had all kinds of consequences that would come from it. What about us, brethren? We cannot be so glued to this world that when it's time to follow the evacuation orders, the mandatory evacuation orders, we decide we're going to tough it out. Complete the thought. Matthew 24, verse 15. When you see, therefore, the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. Let him in the field not go back to get his clothes. That sounded like the Los Angeles Fire Department. Ready, set, go. Woe to those, and so on. Give us more detail. That process from the fire department should help us in our overall spiritual condition. It doesn't just apply in the extreme condition of fiery trials. It can apply in the dominoes of life too. Sometimes the dominoes are just annoying, especially if they fall and smack you in the back of the head. But they can be challenging too. These challenges are tough. We don't like to be moved out of our comfort zones very much, do we? We appreciate routine, especially the familiarity of it. But you know, there's a threat in trials of any kind. Remember the conditions that lead to that extreme kind, the fiery trials, the wildfires? First in time order is really the problem of dry conditions. Dry conditions. Most of California and several of the surrounding states right now are actually a pretty arid region, with rains generally coming on a seasonal basis. You see, once in a while, after a downpour, let's say in one of the Arizona deserts, that suddenly the flowers come out of nowhere. There's just this gorgeous blooming of blossoms and cacti, that flowering cacti, all kinds of things. You think, where was all that? It was right there. But without water, nothing happens. There's an analogy for us in that. The tremendous bounty of fruits and vegetables grown in the Central Valley of California are only possible because of water, usually irrigation. Did you know that in this country, one person out of eight depends on the Colorado River for water? One person out of eight in this entire country depends on water from the Colorado River. Do you know what's happening with the Colorado River? There are some issues involved. Some of the reservoirs are dropping. Some of the levels are lower than they've been seen for many years. That's a problem. Water is absolutely essential. Think about what that means to us in spiritual terms. What is humanity without God? Aren't we also pretty arid? Aren't we a dry, desiccated desert? Not desecrated, but desiccated desert? Yes, we are, without God, lifeless. What understanding of God's purpose could we have unless God Himself intervened in our minds to open those minds and would put in the ability to access His wisdom and His knowledge? Turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 2. First Corinthians 2, in verse 7, breaking into a thought here a little bit, but Paul says, we speak the wisdom of God in a mystery. It is a mystery in the world around us. If you did not know about God's truth of this day and what it is and what it means, what would you or I be doing right now? Well, I don't know, but I guarantee you we wouldn't be sitting in church. We'd be out cutting the grass or shopping or working or who knows what, going to a ball game, even the Akron Rubber Ducks. But we wouldn't know about this unless God had opened our minds. That's a miracle. That's a miracle. The hidden wisdom, Paul writes, which God ordained or predetermined before the ages for our glory. Not that we were something special, but when He calls and opens our mind, what He has done is something special. And it'll be given to everyone in His time, which none of the rulers of this age knew. For had they known, Paul writes, they would not have crucified the Lord of glory. That was only 20 some odd years before he wrote these words. We were talking with the brethren this morning and saying, you know, my wife Janelle and I have been in this general area for 32 years now. After 16 years in Canada. 16 in Canada, a little more than 16 in Mansfield, not quite 16 here in Cleveland. That adds up to 48. Where did that time go? I can show you pictures taken at a shower that was thrown, pre-marriage shower for myself and my wife, and sitting next to us in those pictures were the same two people that are sitting next to us today. How does time happen like that? It does. It is written, "Eye has not seen, nor ear heard, nor have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. But God has revealed them to us through his Spirit. For the Spirit searches all things, yes, the deep things of God. What man knows the things of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Even so, no one knows the things of God except the Spirit of God or through the Spirit of God. Humans understand things of humanity because they are different from the animals by what the Bible calls a human spirit or the spirit in man. Animals don't have it. We are distinct. The difference is not just degree, it's in kind. But there's something else here. His Spirit. What is one of the analogies for God's Spirit in his Word? Oil is one of them, but what's another one? Water. Water. Life cannot exist without it, neither can spiritual understanding. You know, Jesus had an interesting discussion with the Samaritan woman at the well in John chapter 4. His disciples, as we know, had gone into the city to buy food, and he was beside the well that it says Jacob's well, the plot of ground that Jacob gave his son Joseph. And he struck up a conversation with a Samaritan woman who came to the well to draw water. He asked her to give him a drink. The woman of Samaria, verse 9 of John 4, said, "How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" On both counts, it was shocking that she, because he spoke to a Samaritan and because she was a woman in the culture of that day. And then John adds, for Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. Jesus answered and said, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him and he would have given you living water." She said, "Sir, where's your bucket?" That's the Johnson translation. She said, "You don't have anything to draw with, and the well's deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob?" He wasn't her father. That's not the descent line. That's another story. "Who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and livestock?" Jesus said, "Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I give him will never thirst, but the water I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." And of course, she wanted it. Interesting discussion. Three chapters later, in John 7, during the feast, John 7:37, we believe this was likely the seventh day of the Feast of Tabernacles. That was the traditional day for this water ceremony the Jews had. Chapter 8 is probably a record of the last great day, as we would call it, or the eighth day, and he went back to the temple to teach. And in John 7:37, on the last day, that great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the Scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water. But this he spoke concerning the Spirit, which those believing in him would receive, for the Holy Spirit was not yet given because Jesus was not yet glorified." God's Spirit is the living water. God's Spirit can prevent arid conditions spiritually, so that you and I are in far less danger from dry spells in our lives, whether fires or dominoes, or even a terrible spiritual conflagration, because of the water of God's Spirit. So even if the sparks of life in Satan's world fly onto us, they sizzle and they are drowned in the powerful healing washing effect of God's truth. And that's what we need, all of us. Paul used that word picture when he used the analogy of marriage in Ephesians 5. He talked about Jesus washing the church with the pure water of the Word, and that he might present it to himself, a spiritual church, not having spot or wrinkle. And of course, that's the analogy in marriage. The way the husband treats his wife should be like the same way as Jesus Christ treats the church. It's an interesting comparison. Metaphorically, the future world, the new heavens and the new earth, still uses the concept of water. Once we're talking about spirit beings in God's family, there's an analogy, there's a metaphor, there's a lesson learned by a physical comparison. We don't know all the details of this. We'll wait and see when we get there. This is not talking about the time period of the millennium, which is what this new booklet is about. If you watched In Accord last week, you would see that both Mr. Kylo and Mr. Jones took some time to explain that. The booklet basically references the millennial reign of Jesus Christ. That's really the first job for the kingdom. The kingdom is composed only of spirit beings. 1 Corinthians 15:50, flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom. The millennium is bounded by time. It's limited. It's 1,000 years. The kingdom of God, Isaiah the prophecy says, of his kingdom and government, there is no end. So the two are not identical. They are related. They are not identical. And he showed me, verse 20, chapter 22, verse 1, a pure river of life, water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding from the Lamb of God and throne of God and the Lamb. In the middle of its street, on each side of the river, was the tree of life. There are only three books in the Bible that mention the tree of life. I know you can get two of them because we're in Revelation, and you must know that Genesis had the tree of life in it. The other is Proverbs. And if you will allow me, it's a proverbial reference. It was a tree of life which bore 12 fruits, each tree yielding its fruit every month. The leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Does our world need healing? There shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it. His servants shall serve him. They'll see his face. His name will be on their foreheads. That's the future. Beyond the millennium. Beyond the great white throne judgment period or the second resurrection period of time. Beyond. And water is a picture of the healing that God has given his creation. Back to the subject. It's good to know God has an answer for dry conditions, and you and I need to avail ourselves of it. Are you and I being spiritually irrigated? Next in general time order of the danger from fires would be wind. We might make the comparison of the storms of life. Sometimes they actually involve rain too, but the storms and the wind itself can be a problem. Christ spoke of that in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7. He amplified the statement he made about verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father." And as he explains it, he uses a comparison down in verse 24. "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house. And it didn't fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, same circumstances in life, and it fell. And great was its fall." You know what the effect is when people hear the truth of God and they're not used to it? Look at verse 28. Astonishment. If it registers, it's astonishing. If you were the first generation in your family to come to God's truth, when you realized what was being said, wasn't that your reaction? Now, if you were born in the church and somebody said, "The Sabbath is Saturday," you probably didn't go, "You're kidding." You were part of it. That was your experience your whole life. But if that's not what your experience was, if, as my parents both taught Sunday school in a prominent Protestant denomination, I have very faint memories of being in Sunday school because we came into the church when I was 8 years old, but I have some memories. But, of course, if the weather was good and the fish were biting, we opted for a different way to spend our Sundays back then. It was called Roaring River State Park and Rainbow Trout. But things changed when we knew the truth. God's truth changes things. Water changes things. And availability of strength and a foundation to withstand the wind changes things. There was another account in Matthew of the wind in chapter 14. Matthew 14, verse 23. Jesus had been speaking to multitudes when he sent them away. He went up on the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was alone there. But the boat, the disciples had gotten into a boat, was in the middle of the sea. Well, actually, it was the Sea of Galilee, which actually isn't a sea. We've been there. It's also called Lake Gennesaret, and it's really more properly a lake, but it must have seemed like a big deal to them. And it is when you're out on it in a boat, which we were a couple of years ago. But thankfully, it wasn't like this. The conditions were quite calm the day we were out. It was windy. It was tossed by the waves. The wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And they found that even the wind can be controlled by the power of God. How about in your life and mine? The wind made the conditions worse. The damage the wind could cause by making the other conditions more dangerous. That's what happens in fires in California. In very wet seasons, the Santa Ana winds are mostly just an annoyance. We were there for college, my wife 3 years, myself 4. It's not that she only took 3 years to get through. She agreed to accompany me after we got married and not stay the last year as a married student with me in Winnipeg, Manitoba. She, I was glad, really pleased at that. She did get her degree a few years later, 2002, at Ohio State University. But the thing is, California is deceptive. You think, oh, it's always hot. No, in the wintertime, always, somehow the Rose Parade always seemed to be okay. But after that, late January, it could get cold. The Santa Ana winds could come in, and the worst damage they did when we were there was blow your umbrella inside out, which is annoying if the wind is pelting sideways. But, and the rain is coming at you sideways. But when conditions are ripe, those winds can cause untold hardship and agony and financial loss and death. The same thing can happen spiritually. Turn to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Verse 11, he himself, obviously Jesus Christ, gave some to be apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints, for the work of ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ, till we all come to the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we should no longer be children, tossed to and fro and carried about with what? With every wind of doctrine. There are winds of heresy in God's church from time to time. Mr. David Johnson, instructor at FI, calls them cyclical heresies. And they just keep coming around every few years, sometimes every few decades. And people forget. The old Santa Ana quote, if we fail to learn the lessons of history, we're doomed to repeat them. Or the L.P. Hartley quote, a British novelist I used in the classes down there. The past is a foreign country. They do things differently there. And we need to remember those things and understand God's truth is ageless. They don't get carried about with every wind of doctrine by the trickery of men and the cunning craftiness of deceitful plotting, but speaking the truth in love, grow up in all things. We need to be spiritually mature. That's where we're headed. That's where we need to go. It says in verse 16 that we need something. It talks about the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint supplies, the effective working. Turn to chapter 6 and see a few other things we need. One thing that Paul wanted his audience to know, the church at Ephesus, verse 11 of chapter 6, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. For we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, powers, the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Our battle is not entirely composed of physical elements. But what's one of his key devices? Verse 13, take up the whole armor that you may be able to withstand. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace, above all, taking the shield of faith with which you shall be able to quench the fiery darts of the wicked one. How did the fires in Southern California start? On that visit 3.5 years ago, my stepsister and brother-in-law found that one house that was only 1.5 miles away from them burned to the ground. They drove us past it. It was incinerated. There was nothing but ash. A little bit of brick structure from the chimney of the fireplace. We saw it, and we marveled that in that neighborhood, because it was in a neighborhood, it was a strange sight. The houses on either side appeared basically untouched. And here was a house in the middle, completely incinerated. How does that happen? The combination of what we've spoken about. Arid conditions, wind, and one random fiery dart. One fire-blown ember from another fire, maybe some distance away, caught up in the Santa Ana winds, flung at 74 miles an hour hurricane strength, landing right on your house. Is there a message in that for all of us? I think there is. The fires will come in our lives from time to time. Sometimes they won't be huge fires. Sometimes they'll be more like dominoes falling and just an inconvenience. But you know something? Depends on mostly what our attitude is, doesn't it? And our approach to it. In James chapter 1, he makes an analogy about something that we all have to face from time to time. In chapter 3, he talks about the problem with the human tongue. And he makes an interesting comparison. He talks about the fact that if we can control our tongues, we're perfect in verse 2. And he talks about putting a bit in a horse's mouth and controlling the horse. Saw a picture the other day of our little 2.5-year-old grandson on a horse because Rich and Krista are down visiting her parents in Oklahoma. He's got a cowboy hat on. He's standing lounging against the fence with a horse behind him and thinking, oh, brother, where's the baseball hat? There was another grandson at his first baseball game a few years ago. Looked around, third inning, looks at me and said, this is boring. 2 years later, playing wiffle ball with him, he teed off and hit me right in the head, you know, with the wiffle ball. Of course, I had to make a big deal of it and flop and go down and was very proud of himself, stinker. Bits in horses' mouths, ships, small rudder. Verse 5, even so, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. It's so set among our members, it can defile the whole body. Sets on fire the course of nature, set on fire by Gehenna. Every kind of beast, bird, reptile, creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no one can tame the tongue. What a comparison. What a comparison. Sometimes the challenges, well, they come from all kinds of sources, but the answer is right here in James 3, verses 15, 16, 17, 18. What kind of wisdom do we use to fight it? Earthly, sensual, demonic, verse 15, or the wisdom from above, pure, peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, without hypocrisy. There's an interesting proverb in chapter 9, verse 1. It says, "Wisdom has builded her house with its seven pillars." I've wondered about that. If you combine mercy and good fruits, when it just says full of mercy and good fruits, you have 7 points there. I've wondered. Who knows? Who knows? The fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. Are we peacemakers? What about Paul's letter to the Corinthians when he warned us in chapter 3 that the fires of life will test what kind of a structure we've built? Those things will happen. Fiery trial or inconvenient dominoes falling. Which one is it? Turn to 1 Peter chapter 1. In verse 3, Peter says, "Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled and that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you." He's bringing it back with him. I think we understand that. "Who are kept by the power of God through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith," and remember what that shield of faith did back in Ephesians 6? It quenched the fiery darts. "Being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, because the fiery darts of the wicked one and the challenges of life fall on that shield of faith, and it has to be there to protect us, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revealing of Jesus Christ, whom not having seen, you love, though now you don't see him, yet believing you rejoice with joy inexpressible and full of glory, receiving the end of your faith," or the goal, or the result, or the aim, the salvation of your souls. And we find that some of the forefathers in the human race wished they could have understood back then some of the things we do. It's not always easy. Remember that adage from the Los Angeles Fire Department public service ad campaign? Ready, set, go. Some of God's precious people are told in Revelation 3 and verse 18, they are associated with a group called the Laodicean Church, or the church at Laodicea, that they must buy gold refined in the fire. That sounds a little bit like Matthew 25 and the foolish virgins where we started today, doesn't it? We don't want to be in that spot. They're his, but they're weak. They're dry. They're susceptible to the wind. Conditions will at times be in place for challenges to you and to me. The fires will come. Sometimes it's only the dominoes falling, but that's still annoying. Sometimes it's the wind blowing your umbrella inside out. Trials, challenges, adjustments, moving out of our comfort zones, all of it can be part of our lives from time to time. It was interesting to be in Youngstown this morning and know that just a week ago, the Myerses had their last Sabbath there. Interesting comparison. And we were very warmly and lovingly received, as I know that it must have been an emotional time to say goodbye to them after 25 years last week. I don't think we have 25 years to serve as pastor and wife for them. That would make me really old. Now, not too many 94, 95-year-old pastors around that I know of. Mr. Kylo explained in last week's In a Court, the Southwest is concerned. You might recall that stark photograph they showed on the screen behind him, if you were watching it. It showed a cornfield, but not like any cornfield around here that I've seen. These are the cornfields around here. You get lost in them. They make mazes out of them. They cut paths through them. This thing, it looked like about every 4 or 5 feet, there was a really wimpy, withered-looking 3 or 4 foot tall stalk of corn. Sometimes we deal with other kinds of weather troubles here. We can have flooding, tornadoes. It's all dangerous, and I'm sure there are probably spiritual analogies for them all. Mr. Kylo even teased in Intercord last week. If you watched it, he came on. He said, well, you might be thinking that all the presenters for Intercord are meteorologists because they all come up here and talk about the weather. And he said, I want to set your mind at rest. I'm going to predict the weather for the next 3 months in Texas. Hot. And that's when we're headed down for a conference after 2 weeks teaching at FI in August. Well, they do have a little thing called air conditioning. I sure hope it works. What about spiritual weather in your life and mine? There are fires. Then there are just those annoying little dominoes. You know, how long will it be, brethren, before the spiritual fire danger is contained? The West is worried, Southwest. There's an analogy there, isn't there, with Satan and the Day of Atonement? How long before the fire danger is contained? How long will it be before the extent of damage from these spiritual storms we've talked about is fully known? Jesus explained in the Sermon on the Mount, those storms sometimes serve a purpose, though, to show how soundly our spiritual house has been built. What's the foundation? Those challenges can come from time to time in different ways. They can fall on us one by one like dominoes. They can threaten us by random fiery darts falling on the shield of faith we are wielding above us, we hope. What about you? What about me? We know the causes. We know the dangers. We know the pattern needed to battle it. Ready? Set?